Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here with...
Chris.
Dan.
And Lee.
Well, what a week.
It's been good, hasn't it?
Has something happened?
Oh, you've been away, yeah.
I was away in the countryside where there's no internet.
Right.
Being
right.
A secret agent.
Being a farmer.
Oh.
Was that his undercover persona as a farmer?
Probably. Yeah.
Farmer spy. Suppose we really better talk about the main story that's happened this week, and that is the Verstappen and Kvyat swap.
Yeah.
Are we surprised first?
A little that it's happened so soon. Yeah.
That's the main surprise for me. That it's happened now, not at the end of the season.
Well, we talked last week, didn't we, about the fact that he might not make the season.
Yeah.
I didn't know he might have made the week.
My understanding is that there were factions in Red Bull that wanted it to happen well before Russia.
And Russia didn't help.
And no, it's not that Russia didn't help. It's that the team thought that getting rid of their Russian driver before the Russian Grand Prix might not be good PR.
Yeah.
And then Russia happened anyway.
But
things were awkward enough in the cool-down room with Putin there as it was.
Yeah. And then on the other side, it's not just the fact that Kvyat hit Vettel again and again and again and again and again and again and again in one race. It's also the fact that Max Verstappen and Carlos Sainz are more or less trying to kill each other at the moment.
Yeah, they're not getting on.
That's why John Booth was brought in, because effectively he's there as a referee between them.
Yeah, I'd just like to also go back to the Red Bull thing. Reference Jenson Button's tweet that he tweeted when the news broke that Kvyat was dropped from the Red Bull team after a poor race in Russia, but. Did they forget what he did for them in the race before that, when he got on the podium?
Except as many people have pointed out, if Ricciardo hadn't had the puncture...
Ricciardo would have been on the podium.
He would have been on the podium.
Yeah.
Possibly in second place.
Possibly in second place, ahead of Vettel, yeah.
Personally, I think that the man with the most pressure on him now is Ricciardo. That's going to look awful for him.
It's Ricciardo and Sainz, I think, have got quite a bit of pressure on them now.
Because Sainz can just carry on doing the solid job he's doing, especially if Kvyat comes in and he beats Kvyat, which I think he will.
But Kvyat's got nothing to lose now, really. Neither has Max Verstappen. They've put both drivers in positions where they've got nothing to lose. Verstappen, as you were saying before we start recording, Verstappen can go to Red Bull now and be amazing, and everyone will be like, he's amazing. Well done,
yeah,
Max Verstappen.
He could go to Red Bull now and lose his seat if he doesn't perform.
Well, no, because...
No, I don't think he would.
Because...
Oh, okay.
Again, we're into worst kept secret territory. Mm-hmm. It's never officially revealed, but basically the main thing that's come out on the internet and reputable sources about this was Verstappen's contract was for 3 years with the Red Bull Racing organisation.
Yeah.
But the third year had to be with the main Red Bull team, otherwise he was a free agent at the end of 2016.
Yeah, that's fine, but if he goes to a big team now where he's got the car to perform and doesn't perform and maybe turns into a crash kid, which is... there's every possibility of it. There's as much possibility of him going to Red Bull and being rubbish as there is of him going to Red Bull and being brilliant if he's been brought up too early.
Yeah.
And but that could Heikki Kovalainen the fuck out of his career.
It could, but what I'm saying is, with Red Bull being how Red Bull are, that's not going to happen. Because
every driver they've brought up to the main team has worked fucking wonders.
No, they haven't. But if you look at what happens for the rest of the season, Max Verstappen goes... We've talked earlier in podcasts about Red Bull potentially winning races later on in the season. Max Verstappen goes to Red Bull, and if he outperforms Danny Ric, if he wins a race, if he comes on the podium in the next few races... You know, potentially wins a race later on in the season.
Bear in mind, he's come fourth in a Toro Rosso.
But amazing. Oh my God, this guy, what a great move. What a touch of genius to move him up and move Kvyat back down.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't perform well, all I've got to say is, well, we move Max up a little bit too early. And we're going to put him back into Toro Rosso.
He's not had time to learn the car yet.
Yeah, exactly. We moved him mid-season. It's never easy for a driver to move mid-season. In my opinion, he's in a no-lose situation. And it's the same, but reversed, for Danny Kvyat, in that he can go to Toro Rosso, and unless he is really terrible at Toro Rosso, he's got nothing to lose.
Yeah, no, but if he goes to if he goes to Toro Rosso and gets beaten by his junior teammate, who hasn't been in Formula 1 as long as he has, then not only is there no place for him in Red Bull, he's not good enough to be in Toro Rosso.
Kvyat...
Scenario it, time.
Kvyat is effectively racing for a contract with anyone next year.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Scenario
so.
Time. Danny Kvyat outperforms Red Bulls for the rest of the season.
Well.
because we know that the Toro Rossos are capable of challenging Red Bulls.
Well, everyone apart from Toto knows that.
But remember... Yes. Remember that they're on last year's Ferrari engine,
yep,
and getting no upgrades.
Yeah,
most other teams are getting engine upgrades coming yep. sometime soon. I reckon.
So Toro Rosso,
we're going to see Toro
backwards.
Rosso
it
going
will
backwards.
Fall back. There's no yeah. ifs or buts about that. It yeah. will go backwards.
So Red Bull have done this to try and protect Kvyat, in a way.
Yeah,
and also to.
I don't think they care about Kvyat, to be perfectly honest. I think it's a PR stunt.
Also, they've done it to protect Verstappen and Sainz because they know that they're both good drivers, and as just discussed about the whole John Boo thing, they separated them because they are sort of on the verge.
I think it's less that though. I think if there's. Because this is the point I'm making.
Hang on a second, this is
Danny
John
Ricciardo.
Booth's job now. Is John Booth's new job irrelevant now?
Right, he's already been sacked. Well,
no, not necessarily. If he's come in and he's said, I can't make this work, no one can make this work, it might be John Booth who's been putting the pressure on to get Kvyat brought back into Toro Rosso, not as a punishment for not performing well enough in the main team, but to make both the Toro Rosso and Red Bull teams perform as well as they can.
Do you think there's a scenario where Red Bull can see that Verstappen and Sainz will both be driving for Red Bull next season?
Yep.
Absolutely. There's rumours about Ricciardo and Ferrari already.
Well, this is regardless of the rumours about Ricciardo moving, but I mean that Ferrari made no bones about the fact that they had an eye on him when they were thinking about getting rid of Kimi for this year, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which I find quite strange. I'm amazed that Vettel, after the year he had with Ricciardo, would allow Ricciardo into his Ferrari team, or and if he does go into the Ferrari team, I don't believe that he won't have a full-on number two slapped on him.
Oh, Ferrari are great at doing that. Red Bull are less inclined to allow that to happen, sort of let the number two naturally become the number two.
Yeah.
Where
multi-21.
Some of those number two drivers are not bad.
Yeah, exactly. Not bad for number two driver, eh?
He will fulfill his potential as becoming the next Mark Webber.
Well, yeah, but the thing is...
Don't forget, be nice about Mark Webber. He's on the Isle of Man in 3 or 4 weeks for the TT. We might bump into him.
I fucking love Mark Webber. He's like the second large chunk of my heart after Jensen belongs to Webber.
Right, now, okay, now you're probably terrifying him.
But the thing is, the Red Bull natural second driver thing, Danny Ric's first season at Red Bull, Vettel naturally slipped into the number two driver slot at Red Bull, and that's probably why he went to Ferrari. It probably forced his hand in the decision to go to Ferrari.
Yeah.
So with Danny Ric potentially going to Ferrari... And Vettel sort of seeing that as a you know
threat
almost yeah, but Ferrari are not the kind of team to sort of you know we've talked about the driver one A thing before. Mm-hmm. Ferrari are very driver one driver two
yeah,
and they always have been. It's very obvious at the moment that Vettel is their number one driver.
Yeah,
Kimi is a number two driver. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. It's not. It's,
no, no, no.
But
no, no
that, it's, yeah, that, that's not, how it is.
Kimi is full on wingman.
Yeah, Alonso and Massa. Alonso number one, Massa number two.
Yeah.
Schumi and Massa. Schumi number one, Massa number two. Schumi and Barrichello. Schumi number one, Barrichello number two. Go back.
Schumi and Irvin.
Yeah, Schumi number one, Irvin number two. You go way back, like to you know. The '80s and Ferrari, you know, they had number one and number two drivers.
Alessi and Berger. Berger was number one. Alessi was number two.
That's yeah. it. Yeah, it's always been that way.
Together, they were almost a driver.
Yeah, it's always been that way with. It's always been that way with Ferrari. So I don't think that's necessarily a. What's the word for it? It's not necessarily like a talking point for the future where Danny Ric could go and perhaps threaten Sebastian Vettel at Ferrari, because I think, as you say, he'd be slapped into that number two spot. But Red Bull, I think, have made this move thinking that both Toro Rosso drivers, as they were in Sochi,
mm-hmm.
could be Red Bull drivers
come
Australia next year.
Danny Ric only goes to Ferrari if Red Bull don't want him. You wouldn't leave an Adrian Newey designed car at the beginning of a big rule shake-up.
But we don't know how much input Adrian Newey's got to this new 27 regulation Red Bull.
Well, he built the last one. He built this year's.
Mm.
So this whole thing of him taking a step back is bullshit, I think. I think the difference is he just knows that because of the regulations where they are this year, he doesn't need to be there every race. He can still do his job. And it proves he's done his job because they've got the best chassis on the grid.
Well, he was in New York at the weekend because the sailing thing happened.
His
boat came last.
Oh, did it?
No wind.
It is widely thought, as you just said, that Red Bull have the best chassis on the grid.
Yeah.
The slimmest size zero rear end that works as well with the rest of the chassis. And the aero package appears to be the best. And they've made that Tag Heuer engine seem amazing.
They've
it's the same engine, let's not forget, that the Renault team are running.
Yeah.
But
I thought it was completely different.
No, it's well, it is. It's a Tag Heuer. It's been made by a watch manufacturer in Switzerland.
Do you know what the difference is between the Renaults and the Red Bulls? About 5 seconds. But yeah, sorry. So I don't think he would leave to go to Ferrari, because I just don't think you'd leave Red Bull. Red Bull will fight for the championship next year. I fucking guarantee it.
They'd like to be fighting for this one. I mean, maybe they think with Verstappen on board, they can.
I know, they're too far behind for that. I think they're going to menace them towards the end of the season.
I think I do.
I mean, let's face it, we're talking about whether Hamilton can catch.
Well, tell you what, later
on... from where he is behind... So I don't believe that Verstappen can catch no matter what happens.
Later on in the podcast, we're going to talk a little bit more about engine tokens and which manufacturers have got some left. So that might come into play as well.
Yeah.
But to finish off my point, if Verstappen starts outperforming Daniel Ricciardo...
Yeah.
And if the gap is bigger to Ricciardo in comparison to what the gap was with Sainz and Verstappen, that's when... he might get nerfed out of the team. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they're looking at that and think, well, hang on, at Toro Rosso, Verstappen and Sainz were very, very similar on pace. If not, I think Sainz had a slight qualifying edge.
I think Sainz has got a slight racing edge, I think, over Verstappen.
I don't know if Verstappen scored all the points.
Yeah.
But when
it comes to racing each other, quite often, Sainz has been out ahead. Yeah,
yeah. He also had some really bad luck last year as well. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the season, by people running into him in breakdowns. But if the gap's there and it looks like, oh well, hang on, Sainz can keep Verstappen honest, Daniel Ricciardo can't seem to keep him honest.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's when I think the Ferrari move could be on. But I don't believe that he will leave Red Bull under his own. Thing. I don't even know if his contract will allow it. Christian Horner says we have a number of drivers under multi-year deals. Ricciardo only signed his deal last year, didn't he?
One is a number.
Well, one is a number. But he only signed his deal last year. So if he's got the same sort of deal as Verstappen had, where it was like a two-year deal with a third-year option, he might not even be open.
Yeah, but don't forget, when a driver's contracted to Red Bull, he is contracted to the Red Bull Racing organisation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you could be put in a Red Bull, you could be put in a Toro Rosso, you could be put in...
the Rallycross VW.
Rallycross.
What I mean is...
Red Bull Air Race Series?
Yeah, snowmobiling.
Yeah, but even if he wants to go to Ferrari, he might not be contractually able to go there.
You're always contractually able to go somewhere if there's enough cash.
Well,
that's the thing, and Ferrari, as we know, aren't afraid to throw money at buying contracts out.
Yeah,
because they've done that plenty of times. Just for example, when they rebuilt the team around Schumacher, Ross Brawn, and Rory Byrne, they effectively bought them out of Benetton.
Yeah.
And that wasn't cheap. Yeah, it's I can't remember the exact amount, but they paid a fortune to get all three.
Yeah.
Because they wanted the dream team that had taken two titles. So
with a car that shouldn't have been as good as it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, that was the last championship victory for a Ford engine.
Yeah.
Was Schumacher in 1994, even though he cheated. Still got to get that in. Damon Hill was robbed.
He was.
Do we think... I should have probably mentioned this one earlier. Do we think we'll still see Kvyat on the grid by the end of the season? Is he gradually working his way down to be unceremoniously dumped? And are we going to see somebody else driving a Toro Rosso alongside Carlos Sainz?
Question is, who else do they get in at Red Bull? Which younger drivers do they have coming up? Because there was Antonio Felix da Costa was being talked about for a while as a potential Toro Rosso driver. I can't think, aside from him, now of anybody ready to step into...
Well, that was an article I was reading on F1 Fanatic, I think. And they seem to suggest that the pool of driver talent in Red Bull isn't particularly deep.
It's not strong at the moment.
No, when it comes to people that are ready to make the step to Formula One.
And if you're talking about people to come in this year, they have to have a super licence.
Is Sebastian Buemi still the reserve driver at Red Bull?
Yeah, but he's fully Gary Paffetted, isn't he?
Well, possibly. Fully Gary Paffetted. Very good.
That's one way of describing it.
Fully Oliver Turvey.
Yeah. Absolutely Turvey.
Oh dear. Great drivers who are never going to see the light of day in Formula One.
Yeah, you could say it's been Davison.
You could say. Oh no, he raced in Formula One.
Oh yeah, not for long.
No, even still.
So did Buemi.
Yeah. Well, Sebastian Buemi had 2 years at Toro Rosso and then became the reserve driver at Red Bull.
Yeah.
I think he's still the reserve driver at Red Bull. Should anything happen to either of the Red Bull drivers, I think Buemi is actually the reserve.
Should anything happen to the Red Bull drivers while they've been getting rid of one?
It's actually Pierre Gasly that is the third driver at Red Bull.
Pierre Gasly, right, okay. Yeah. So is he likely to step into a Toro Rosso seat?
How old is he?
24?
Yeah, about mid-20s.
So he's too old for Red Bull. He's too old for Toro Rosso.
They're all thereabouts in GP2.
Yeah, he's all front-end GP2.
Yeah.
Pierre Gasly.
Yeah, but he's too old for Toro Rosso at the old age of 22.
Yeah, no, I think he's 20, I think he's a little bit older than that. But yeah, he was being touted as I forgot about Pierre Gasly, actually.
Yeah, he's actually 20.
I think we'd have to be looking at something spectacularly going wrong with Kvyat for him to be booted out of the team.
Yeah.
He's a point of contract here. They might not be able to get rid of him, even if they wanted to.
They're going to, regardless of who the driver is, there's going to be performance clauses, and if a driver causes too many accidents, that teams will find a way to dump them from the contract. Yeah, but can effectively be sacked for gross misconduct.
But let's
Michael Andretti.
He's not done anything bad enough.
Scott Speed. Scott Speed.
Yeah.
Had a fight with his mechanic.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean...
Talking of fighting in the garage, literally, apparently one of the things that came out of Sochi was some of the mechanics from Verstappen's side having an altercation with Franz Tost, and two of the Toro Rosso mechanics from what was Verstappen's side of the garage, and I'm assuming is now Kvyat, have found themselves being replaced.
Yeah, the race engineer, Max's race engineer at Toro Rosso, has been unceremoniously dumped.
Oh,
yeah.
No, but isn't he going to Red Bull?
No.
Oh, I thought he was going to Red Bull when I read that.
No,
he's been fired.
So it's not just the drivers that weren't getting on, it was the team principal and the mechanics.
It's all that fucking caffeine, isn't it?
They are sponsored by Red Bull Cola. Has anyone ever tried Red Bull Cola?
Other colas are available and I would rather drink them, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just stick with that.
Yeah, don't wish to do any company's products down, but you can't beat the real thing.
Holidays are coming.
Maybe if Kvyat does get dumped by Red Bull, then he could drive that lorry, and that would really put one over on Red Bull.
It would do, wouldn't it? Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, if that red cola brand suddenly decided they wanted to sponsor a podcast, I will fully embrace capitalism. Fully and wholeheartedly embrace it.
Don't reject capitalism with your iPhone or anything. Sorry, interpersonal jokes. We'll get back onto the subject of Formula One.
Other economic systems are available.
Yes, they are. Including socialism.
But, does it seem like there are issues in the Toro Rosso garage with that news coming out? Because Franz Tost doesn't appear to be the easiest person to get on with anyway.
Well, he seems to get on very well with Helmut Marko, which says to me...
He's a cunt.
Yeah. Says to me he's a very difficult person to get along with.
Did anyone have 20 minutes before Lee's first C-bomb of the night, or is it a rollover for next week?
Is that the first one of the night?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, okay. So, yeah, anybody who does the sweepstake on when Lee's first C-bomb was... Boom. Yep, 20 minutes.
Yeah. It's just cunts. They bring out the cunt in me.
Thanks to Jacques Villeneuve for that musical interlude.
But Franz Tost appears to be a very difficult man to get along with. There's a reason he's been at the head of the junior Red Bull team. He is responsible for sifting through the Vettels and the Sebastian Bourdais. So, you know, he has to make sure that the right drivers go forward, the wrong drivers... Go back to IndyCar and get sponsored by McDonald's.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an easy job because, I mean, he's dealing with what is effectively young, precocious talent.
Yeah.
And sometimes the emphasis is on prick.
Yeah.
Stole it right out of my mouth. Carry on.
it can't be an easy job. I mean, he does look a bit like the Demon Headmaster anyway.
Well, I think Terence Hardiman's much prettier than the Mastos.
Obscure 1990s British kids TV references. Hi, all our American listeners.
Yeah.
Google it. He's not got the easiest of jobs anyway, and he's dealing with talent that can be a little bit... I don't like to say arrogant, but precious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overly self-assured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
overconfident.
Yeah. Not crippled by self-doubt.
No.
So I guess he's got to come down hard on them. And does that include coming down hard on the people that are working in close contact with that talent? And obviously arguing with the mechanics, yes, it does.
Well, it's going to have to, because they are the people who surround the driver within the garage, and if a driver is stepping out of line and his engineers and mechanics aren't sort of taking him to one side and being like, concentrate on the race, then he has to come down on the mechanics and be like, you need to make sure your driver concentrates on the race. Mm. It's his job as a team boss, but he appears to be, as we've just said, a little bit towards the more evil side of team bosses.
Sorry, I drift off for a second there. Are we talking about Franz Tost coming hard or the pricks coming hard?
We didn't say anything about coming hard. We said coming down hard.
No, the reason why Lee went quiet is he just spent the last couple of minutes working out that joke.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine.
Yeah. You can actually see the cogs turning.
Hey, I'm a fucking comedy genius. I know it.
So, what do we think then? Overall, good move, bad move, or is the jury still out until we've seen one race?
It's the story of the season, I think. I think it's going to continue to be the story of the season for the rest of the year.
I think the jury is still out. Verstappen needs to perform. Like I say, I think he's got nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't perform, but I think he needs to perform. Will he overperform at Red Bull and end up being Mad Max again, where he sort of plows into the back of people, a la Danny Kvyat?
In fairness, Kvyat doesn't just hit the back of people, he hits the sides as well.
And make sure that if he didn't go out of the race the first time, they will the second time.
Yeah.
I was woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning when the news broke.
By people tweeting you.
Yeah. Thanks, Gemma. And a load of other people.
Yeah, I've discovered the Do Not Disturb function on my phone.
Yeah, well, see, that's the difference between you and me, Paul. I like to give a bit of myself to the people.
Careful now.
I like sleep. Shall we move on?
Yeah, do that.
Ron Dennis, then. He's on a personal crusade against 2017. Not the regulations, just the year.
He's got a big battle there.
He's got a big battle on his hands. It's gonna last about 365 days, and he's gearing up for it now.
Legend has it he stood atop the MTC, McLaren Technology Centre, shaking his fist violently to the east. Waiting for that first sunrise of 2017.
So he's not a fan of the new regs.
No, apparently not. He is. McLaren have played this down, but many other sources reporting that he is furious at the 2017 rules that have been agreed, being in some cases a U-turn on what was originally agreed between the teams. And the only reason I can think that he is furious, in inverted commas, about the regulations are that McLaren had been working on the original agreements between the teams, and now that a lot of that has been changed, Ron Dennis's hard work and the hard work that he's made the team sort of focus their efforts upon is now redundant.
See, I'd have to dig it up and have a look and see if I could find the... you know, like the original proposal.
Yeah.
Because when I look at the proposal that's been put forward, you know, that's basically confirmed now for next year, doesn't seem a lot different from what we were talking about in the first place.
Well, I've got the new 2017 regs in front of me here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, obviously the first thing that we've seen after the test last week is the new tyre sizes. The front is going up... they're both going up considerably by about a quarter. The front tyres will increase from 245mm to 305mm.
Width?
Yes. So that's going to be foot-wide tyres, and the rears are going up from 325 to 405.
Well, bigger rear tyres sounds really interesting, actually, because that's what the old Formula One cars had.
Yeah, because, I mean, you watch the historic races, certainly you could tell it from back in the 70s.
And, well, yeah, the rear tyres, right up to the mid-90s. Yeah,
the rear tyres were absolutely massive in comparison to the front.
Yeah.
I mean, now the front tyres are going to be three-quarters of the size of the rear, so we'll get into that point again. Pirelli tested some of the potential new compounds last week in a 2014 Ferrari with Jean-Éric Vergne. And the 2014 car was small and narrow anyway. And it just showed how bigger they were. We put it on Twitter, and I'll try and find the photo and put it out on the site. But the there's going to be a lot more grip involved in those tyres.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's...
It'll be interesting to see what that'll do with the engines now, won't it? No, with them have it, with them being turbos.
Yeah.
And them having a bigger footprint to essentially get that power down. Yeah, it might... It might help some... Yeah, you know, because the big problem with the new engines has been, like, power delivery, hasn't it? So I don't know whether a big footprint for the rear tyres will help...
It will help be able to put more power onto the surface of the track.
More traction, don't
you? Yeah, correct. So, yeah. But just as a quick side note, with Jean-Éric Vergne testing the Pirelli tyres, Lee, did you say something in midweek about a new driver testing tyres for next year?
Pastor Maldonado and Jean-Éric Vergne
are testing Pirelli tyres.
I believe it's Pastor Maldonado, which is why you wanted to bring this up.
It is, absolutely.
Is that testing or stress testing?
Pastor Maldonado is testing the tyres for next year now.
The used ones that they have in barriers around the side of the track that the cars go into when they've gone off.
Making sure how tough they are.
Yeah, he's tested those for years.
The tyre barriers.
Yeah.
Maybe it's tyre tethers he's testing.
It may be, yeah, who knows. But the Pastor Disaster Predictor might make a comeback if he's testing Pirelli tyres to the point where they burst.
It's not going to be which turn and which lap, it's how many cars is he going to take out that he's personally driving.
There's only two of them.
Well, and he'd be on the track by himself.
Did Nick Heidfeld manage to get himself back into a race seat when he was testing tyres when Pirelli first came in?
No, I don't think
so. Was that not one of his returns?
It might have been, actually. It was
because he was in Renault, wasn't he?
No, but he did stint being BMW Sauber as well, didn't he?
Oh, that was...
Was that well too long ago?
That was way too long ago, I think. Yeah, Nick Heidfeld's last drive was when he was in Renault and he was dumped out of the team for Bruno Senna, wasn't he? That was, what, 2012, 2011?
Yes. 2011, it was halfway...
So that might have been after the Pirelli tyres.
Halfway
tires,
through. I'm just having a look.
But Nick Heidfeld was a tyre testing driver.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As was Lucas Digrassi.
Yeah. But that's what I'm thinking about. To be fair, I'm more thinking of Jean-Éric Vergne, mind you. Maybe I'm not thinking about Jean-Éric Vergne because Jean-Éric Vergne doesn't come with that massive check.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Heidfeld tested for Pirelli in 2010, and he raced for Renault the following year.
So yeah, he did have. So he did.
It was his comeback. Well remembered.
So it just goes to show then that if the teams take notice of who's testing the rubber when things are going to change.
Yeah, Guido van der Garde said he'd be available to do it as well, but
nobody asked him.
Nobody asked him. He's just going to turn up, get in the car, and say, "I'm testing your tyres."
Yeah,
I apologise to the listeners for that laugh.
He's going to turn up with four spare tyres, remolds that he's just got from the garage. He'd be like, "I'm good to go, boys." That's how he talks.
Does that say Jacques Villeneuve on your overalls? Where did you even get them, Guido? And he's 4'3". You're massive.
Oh dear.
Moving on from the tyres.
What else is in the regulations that Ron might be quite upset about?
Car widths.
They're up to 2 metres?
Up from 1400mm to 1600mm.
I thought they were 1800 to 2 metres.
Nope, that is the suspension track.
That's the suspension track. Is this body width?
This is actual body width. This is chassis width.
Right, okay. So they are actually making those 200 millimetres.
Yeah, the suspension track will be increased from 1,800 to 2 metres.
That's something.
So the whole thing is 200 millimetres.
The whole thing is going to be 2,000 mil wide.
Yeah.
So, every time I've seen the regs, you see, there's been it's been a half and half job.
Yeah.
Is that what you've got there?
No, I've just got a list.
Oh, right. Because when I saw that, it was like, it said how many mil the car was as opposed to the one that's next to it. Yeah. And I couldn't quite work out when I was looking at it whether that means, well, that's double. Do you know what I mean? Because it was showing you half the car from this year and half the car from last year.
Yeah, you don't really get, with that one though, it was split down yeah, the centre line across the cockpit.
Yeah.
So you couldn't actually see the differences in car width.
Yeah, so if it's it was, like it was only sort of length. 400 over the whole car.
No.
I doubt it, because a car that's 4 metres wide would be.
No, yeah, so I was just huge. No, I was just saying numbers then. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The car is going to be 2 metres wide in total.
Yeah.
Like each side wide, is going to be 100 millimetres longer.
Right, yeah. Okay, cool.
So that is a bigger surface area for the engine to put power down over.
Yeah, just in general, yeah. There's a bigger space for... It's a bigger surface area for aero as well as... Yeah. Tires.
Well, that'll just naturally give you more downforce anyway because
there's more
it's
air.
Bigger.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I mean, the one thing is the front wingspan is going to be 1800 millimetres, which that means the front wing is going to be as wide next year as an entire car
is this year.
Wow. That's
big.
That really explains the difference then, doesn't it? You know, that these measurements make.
Yeah, you can put it in real terms, because you look at a car now, and obviously the front wheels overlap the wing.
Yeah.
But the wing is going to be as wide as the car, including the wheels, is.
Mental.
I think...
The rear wing's lower as well, isn't it? Isn't the rear wing lower than...
Well, the rear wing is going to be 200 mils wider, so it's going to be 950 millimetres.
Yeah.
And the height is going to decrease by 150 millimetres.
So it'll be very low.
It's a low slung, sort of wider, wider. It's very easy to say.
Regardless,
wider rear wings. We're going back to like 1994, 95 with these regulations.
Pretty much, because it was 96 that the thinner cars came in. It was 97.
Yeah,
the thinner cars, because Hill won his world championship in the last of the
big
wide
cars.
For the 1997 ones, they called them the Thin Lizzies.
Don't forget though, didn't the
F1 Racing did at any rate.
Mm.
Didn't we have quite low, long rear wings back in sort of the 2006 sort of time? Didn't the cars go a bit bigger again around that time?
I don't know. I don't think they did.
No, because I mean, 2008 was when the 2008 or 2009 when the narrower rear wings and wider front wings came in.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was, because that was when the Renault had the little tiny front wing, wasn't it? I know what you mean.
Yeah, but when the new wider front wings came in, and everyone thought all the cars had grown Mansell style tashes.
Oh yeah.
Well, what are they going to think about these ones when they come out then? Because this is going to be
the full-on Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. the Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, but I think the thing is because the cars are generally bigger, it won't look weird, will it?
Yeah, it's. I think going on this because we haven't even seen the conceptual art, serious conceptual art outside of internet blueprints. That somebody's knocked together in Adobe Animator or something. But it, from the sounds of this, it sounds like the cars are staying in proportion. There's just going to be more of it,
yeah.
Mm.
So, from what you've said so far, is there any difference to what we talked about last time we talked about the 2017 rigs?
From the sounds of things...
They've been confirmed.
Yeah, but from the sounds of things, from that video that we found... towards the end of last year,
the Italian modelling house who animated the differences between the 2017 and 2016 cars.
From the sounds of things, no, there isn't.
So, what does Mr. Dennis have to get all upset about?
That is a very good question. Answers on a postcard.
I find it weird that his driver
to threelegsfourwheels@gmail.com.
I find it weird
e-postcard.
That you've got Eric Boulier and...
I find it weird that you've got Eric Boulier.
Yeah, in a job. And you've got him and Fernando Alonso sort of championing the 2017 rules and Ron Dennis publicly bashing them.
Well, he hasn't publicly bashed them. This is the thing. Like McLaren have played down the fact that he's furious. He's not furious about them.
Yeah, but I mean, usually that wouldn't get out at all, though. You know, it's like McLaren.
For McLaren to have to play it down, kind of means that he is. Furious about them.
McLaren are usually quite good for having one voice, aren't they? Yeah, you know,
normally.
Yeah,
but then I know what you mean. This is split.
Yeah.
This is strange. This is Brexit
style. I'm putting out there, I think there's a chance that the new cars next year, including the canopy, because the more I see, certainly a side profile of that canopy.
Yeah, the halo or the...
No, the canopy. Like the
screen. The Red Bull shield.
I think it looks cool as fuck. I think it looks really good. And I genuinely think that, especially on a bigger car as well, where it's moulded and meant to be on that car... I think next year's cars will be the best looking cars in my lifetime.
Possibly. My only problem is with the canopies like we were talking about last week, I don't want to dwell on it too long this week, is if it rains or something on the screen that you can't remove, whereas drivers now have tear off visors.
Yeah. Are they gonna have tear off in the pits?
Yeah, but they'd have to come into the pits if something happened.
Mm.
Yeah, well they'd have to come into the pits if something went in the face.
Not necessarily, it's happened before, you just tear
depends
off
how big it is.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm sure there's probably a very feasible technical explanation for this, and if any of our listeners know what it is, can they please tell us?
Is there anything in 2017 regulations changing the cockpit or monocoque where the driver sits, seating positions, dimensions, is that wider or is it just the body of the car?
It is just the body of the car, and the only change around the cockpit appears to be head protection.
But with the cars being bigger, won't they'll be further down in the car anyway, won't they?
Well, the cars are going to be wider but not taller.
Yeah, but where the driver sits is not going to be any different.
Right, okay.
It's probably not going to be any wider.
Mm-hmm.
There was another thing about the reduced exclusion zone, which is the gap between the front wheels and the side pod, to allow for larger barge boards. So if the exclusion zone's larger and they can put bigger barge boards in there, then no, the cockpit gap itself isn't going to be any wider, because they're still going to want to make that as narrow as possible so they can fit larger barge boards and deflectors in to divert
into the
airflow.
Yeah.
So effectively, the driver's tub is going to be completely unchanged.
Yeah, it makes sense if they've got larger barge boards because the rest of the car's big.
There's going to be more air to deflect.
Yeah.
So they're going to need proportionally larger to deflect the proportionally larger amount of air.
Yeah.
Correct.
Try getting that out in one go after the strength of coffee that you made me earlier. Twice. On the subject of Eric Boulier with this, his take on it is that He disagrees with the comments made in the media from his competitors. The regulation has been drafted in a way so that the car will generate more downforce from the tyres, so mechanically, which should not hurt the overtaking numbers. The influence of the front wing will be lower since the floor and the diffuser will generate more downforce, allowing more overtaking. All this makes the car allow more overtaking manoeuvres, maybe by 5%, as all current overtaking manoeuvres are driven by DRS and tyre regulations.
Ooh, 5%. Careful now.
See, I agree with Alonso's statement here when he said Formula One was better with less overtaking and faster cars. And the more I thought about it, I thought, well, actually, like, overtakes aren't as exciting as they used to be. Not the DRS ones, because you know it's a slam dunk most of the time when you get two cars on a straight and one's got DRS.
Yeah, like somewhere like China, for example, and they're 0.6 of a second behind and open the DRS.
It's literally like giving someone an extra gear when they need to overtake.
No, I
completely agree with Alonso on that. It is fake.
It is fake, but it has produced some interesting racing.
The only thing... it hasn't produced interesting racing, because the interesting racing is when cars are out trying to outbreak each other.
Interesting racing is battles.
Yeah.
It's your laps and laps and laps of to get past, getting past, being re-overtaken.
Yeah, but what DRS has done is allowed Formula One, in an era where it's difficult to follow, to allow cars to get closer and get past.
Yeah, but that's what it was supposed to be for, but that's not where it's done. It's allowed cars to get close and then go straight past. The idea for DRS in the first place was to allow cars to slipstream easier and then get wheel to wheel in a braking zone, and then you had to do the braking to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that was McLaren's original idea with the F-duct.
Yeah, but it hasn't done that. It's just made it a slam dunk nearly every time.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I think if they're gonna keep DRS, drivers can use it when they want, wherever they want. Even through corners. If you think you're going to get through a corner with your rear wing open, good luck to you, mate. If you go off, it's your own luck.
Was it Alonso in Spain a few years ago in the Ferrari who had his DRS stuck open for three laps and they had to call him in twice to try and close his DRS?
Of course, remember that they're allowed to use the DRS wherever they want in qualifying.
No, they're not anymore.
No,
they're only allowed to use it in DRS zones now.
Yeah.
That was a change that got brought in last season.
Ah, I missed that one.
Yeah, it used to be that they could use it anywhere on the circuit.
In practice.
In practice and qualifying. But now they can only use it in the DRS zones. They don't have to be a second behind somebody else. Just if they're in a zone, they can open it up.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why we were getting much faster times in practice, even in race simulations, than we were doing in the race, because they were getting DRS on the shorter straights as well.
I will point out as well, this season we've seen quite a lot of overtaking done out of DRS zones. So all of a sudden, a 5% increase in what we've got now, it's going to be pretty fucking good, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what was it, the example Alonso made about the...
He was talking about 2005
and 2006 San Marino Grand Prix, the Imola races. There was only something like 12 overtaking manoeuvres, but he said it was a better race.
Yeah, I just thought then, when Eric Billy was disagreeing about this, I've got this funny thought in my head of Eric Billy going, "I totally disagree. What's the question?"
That's, yeah.
Well, it's better than him completely avoiding the question and going all Maldonado and doing the Eric Boulier version of "we always push." We always deny. No, we don't. Or do we? Ron!
That's a cake.
The next thing on the list is Alonso hates 2016, loves 2017. I think we've just basically said that.
Yeah.
Other big story that sort of cropped up in the last couple of hours. Rogue Rotor NASCAR.
Which is an interesting one, because...
A big publicity stunt for the Haas team.
Yeah, who are part of the Stuart Haas NASCAR outfit. Now, we were talking about this just before the podcast, and we think the only viable time for Romain Grosjean to step into NASCAR will be during Formula One's mid-season break, in what was that, like after Hungary and before Belgium,
yeah,
which is like the 4 weeks sort of end of July to end of August, really.
Yeah,
that's the only time they can do it. I don't see how Romain Grosjean's going to be able to fly to the US, do a race, and then fly somewhere else, and then do a race. You know, in between,
yeah,
between races, it can't be on a weekend off in between races. That doesn't seem to make any sense.
If Keanu Reeves can watch them, Grosjean can race them.
But remember that
this is true.
So Grosjean in MotoGP.
NASCARs are very different to Formula One cars, and I find it difficult to believe that you could drive one weekend and drive another weekend and be successful in both without any time to reacclimatise.
It could just be a total like bullshit PR story as well, and his NASCAR debut could just be some sort of exhibition thing.
Well,
give him a test, yeah, sort of thing.
Yeah. Don't watch NASCAR because the channel that it's on over is an extra £15 a month. And
I don't watch it because I like watching motor racing.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to be subtle here, but yeah, don't watch NASCAR. But if it's anything like IndyCar, where they get a celebrity driver to do the opening parade lap and then pull off the track before the rolling start, it could even just be that.
Yeah.
Haas are doing a great job of trying to break F1 in the States. And to be honest, I think they're doing a better job than F1 have done.
Yes.
Of trying to get an audience in the States. So certainly from personal experience, what we've found,
yeah,
through the podcast is...
How amazing the amount of American listeners we've got, yeah, so I didn't think Formula One was as popular as it clearly is in America.
Yeah, yeah. And if there are people listening in America and you genuinely think that Formula One has gotten over in your country and it's becoming a big sport, let us know. Send us an email, threelegsfourwheels@gmail.com.
Yeah, I mean, we do get a lot of feedback from our American listeners. I could name two straight away: Michael Cohen and Rich Walker.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thanks for all your tweets, guys. By the way, much appreciated.
Yeah, and all the interaction over the past year and a bit that we've been doing this.
And Lanny Ness as well. I think that's how you pronounce your surname.
Yeah, with his email from last week.
Which we'll discuss points later on.
We could have Kenny Afroth, I can't say his second name, as a Formula One fan as well, because I still don't know whether he followed me because of the drum and stuff I put up on thing, but a drum Twitter, or he followed us because of the Formula One podcast.
Oh, Kenny Aronson.
Aronoff.
Aronoff.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what you mean. But yeah, is it a case of Haas are getting F1 over in the States, so let's bring our best F1 driver, well, all right, our F1 driver, because Gutierrez doesn't really count at the minute.
Not at the moment.
The other thing that putting Romain Grosjean in a NASCAR race would do is get F1 fans who wouldn't otherwise watch NASCAR watching NASCAR.
Yeah, just have to hope that a channel other than Premier Sports shows it, because I'm damned if I'm paying £15 a month just for NASCAR and ice hockey and Australian Rugby League. That's the only other thing that they've got.
I've never even heard of this sports channel.
You're really not. I only know it because non-league football used to be on there, and I used to follow a non-league team who then became a league team and now have become a non-league team again. Mm-hmm. But enough of my sporting supporting woes.
To be perfectly honest, though, and I'm not sure where it stands here, like saying this, but if you want to watch NASCAR, I'm sure there's plenty of places you can watch NASCAR without paying for it.
Oh yes, I'm sure they show it in a lot of pubs.
Yes.
Wink. but yeah, I suppose it could be something to introduce European F1 fans.
Yeah,
to NASCAR.
Bit of crossover, so promoting Formula One to the NASCAR audience and NASCAR to the Formula One audience.
Mm. Yeah.
It also might make some of the NASCAR fans, as you just say, to, you know, sort of, oh, Romain Grosjean, you know, he drives for the Haas Formula One team. I might check him out.
Did you say Indianapolis when you were talking about it?
No.
Well, one of us said Indianapolis, but yeah, that one of us was wrong.
No, but that was a different sport and a different Haas team.
But
apart from that, it was still a car.
They race around Indianapolis, don't they?
Yes.
So that if you were going to do this,
I think,
to try and put eyes on IndyCar and Formula One as like a crossover thing, you'd do it in Indianapolis.
Well, I don't know because. Sure. I mean, the main
of the races that falls in the gap, I believe, is Watkins Glen, which obviously has Formula One history as well as
perhaps a Formula One future as well.
Yes,
quite possibly. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing with Indianapolis is they have a NASCAR race, but it's not the main race of the NASCAR season. I do know this; it's the Daytona 500.
Yeah.
I think the Indianapolis one's called the Brickyard 500, the NASCAR race they have there. But Watkins Glen would make more sense as an F1 crossover, with it, as you say, having the history and possibly the future.
Yeah, but I'd argue that the people that's eyes that are going to be on it won't really know anything about the F1 crossover with the place.
Well, I suppose it depends how it's presented, because Haas could go all this happened at Watkins Glen in the Formula One races back in the 70s and early 80s.
Yeah, it could do. I don't think there's enough there.
This is where Mario Andretti won races.
Oh, well, yeah, I suppose if you can slap
French
an
drivers
Andretti
don't
on
have
it.
A great history at Watkins Glen, though.
No.
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 No?
No.
Why, no?
No, Francois Sever. He. Yeah, that's where he died.
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah.
So...
They may want to gloss over that, or all of a sudden Grosjean's Swiss again for the week.
Yeah, he was Swiss at one point, wasn't he, Grosjean?
Yeah, and Nico Rosberg was Finnish.
Yeah, and then Grosjean was French, and Nico Rosberg was from Monaco. No, it, wait, Germany. Germany.
No, anywhere.
Anywhere but home.
Don't know about you, but I'm old-fashioned about this. I like my people to have a nationality.
Well... You claim to be Manx, and that's not an official nationality, or it wasn't on the census that we've just had to fill
in. I actually claim to be Jedi, but carry on.
Not of this earth. No, it'd be interesting to see how it pans out and what publicity they use. One thing I do know is that Haas have definitely stepped up their media activities and publicity with... the press releases that they're sending out and actually putting more photos of Grand Prix weekends out. Because for the first couple of races this season, their media activity was minimal, which I suppose you can expect from a new team. They're finding the feet a lot better and bringing F1 to a bigger audience in the US, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Absolutely. There's nothing, yeah. There is no downsides, apart from maybe Esteban Gutierrez. There's no downsides for Haas like this year.
No, but we discussed as well, in a wider sort of audience, Formula One. Was it Bernie saying he wants a 24 race calendar or something like that, with six races in the US?
Yeah, but that was Bernie, so what did he really mean?
Probably wants two races in the US with a 22 race calendar.
Yeah, not that he's prone to exaggerating or anything. There's one story that we're not covering this week about Bernie that's appeared in a paper that none of us trust, so we're not even going to mention it. There we
Correct.
Go. I didn't.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about what's coming up this weekend, then?
There is a race happening this
weekend.
There
is a race happening. It's not in Watkins Glen.
Nope.
It's nobody's going to be driving NASCARs.
Well, not at this particular
Not at this particular race, but they're going to be driving F1 cars around Barcelona.
It's got corners,
yep,
hasn't
it? The circuit, Circuit de Catalunya.
Yes.
In
Spain.
Yes. Near Barcelona.
Yes.
Quiz time! Yeah!
First thing is, teams are upgrading like mad now that we're in Europe.
Well, it's the traditional time for upgrades, isn't it, Barcelona?
Yeah. Get the flyaway races time. Out of the way. So does this mean that Sochi isn't in Europe?
Well,
this is Sochi that's closer to Europe than Baku.
It is. I actually had a look at the Baku City Circuit official website during the weekend. I shared it with you guys. I think, Paul, you had a quick look at it as well.
Yeah.
I get the impression that Azerbaijan is struggling for tourism because all they have to sell to you, really, is hills that catch fire all by themselves.
And Canada's got that.
Yeah.
And they've got a Grand Prix as well.
Some glass that came from Italy that they put in a church, and a race.
They've got a cycle race as well. There's the Tour of Azerbaijan, which Eurosport keep advertising during the Giro d'Italia.
But what I don't understand is that this. I don't understand why they've done this. They must have.
I don't understand why we're talking about Baku when it's Barcelona next week.
I know. I'm just cutting in very quickly, saying this.
He's going Baku to the future.
Ta-da! I think they're struggling to sell tickets for Azerbaijan. I really do. Because...
Well, the whole thing about Azerbaijan hosting the European Grand Prix is that Azerbaijan appears to be trying to position itself as the place for sport. Because they had the European Games last year, which we mentioned before, which was... It's meant to be the European equivalent of the Olympics, but it wasn't.
The website...
Synchronised aerobics is not a sport.
The website says where East meets West, and the point I was going to circle back to was that Sochi...
But that was Istanbul, and the Grand Prix there didn't really work, either.
No, that didn't work. But the Grand Prix in Sochi, even though it was technically part of the European season, it's interesting that Spain, for the teams, is still seen as the start of the European season.
Yeah.
Even though you've got that race in Sochi, which is way over there, and Spain is Western Europe, I suppose. You'd have to now call it start of the Western European season.
Yeah.
Because that's where a lot of the teams obviously based in Britain, a couple of them based in Italy. It's a lot easier for them to get parts through the European Union.
The doctor chartered Bernie Airways to fly a plane over.
Correct.
I think the other thing you've got to think as well is because of the testing that goes on at Spain is they know the circuit really well. So what's a better place to shake down parts?
New parts, against the parts that they've already tested.
Just one other thing about Baku.
Just quickly, the other thing is they don't need to do a lot of race setup either.
No,
because they've already got it.
Carry on.
They ran all those laps with the chicken wire on the side of the car to determine that.
Yeah.
just one other thing about Baku that I still can't get my head around this season. It's out the other side of Europe, and it comes the week after Canada.
Yeah, is it going to one of those races that's quicker to fly around the other way around the world, as in like past Asia?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's about half and half.
Oh.
But yeah, Azerbaijan and Canada, Baku to back.
Oh.
Should we get Baku to the subject?
I think we probably should. Barcelona upgrades. Haas have a new rear wing coming in. The rear wing has been the least of their problems this season.
It's the front wing has been most of their problems. Yeah, I was going to
say, the rear wing is the opposite of their problems this season. Because they've really
struggled... No, it isn't. The opposite of Esteban Gutierrez is Romain Grosjean.
But yeah, they've struggled with the front.
I think you'll find the opposite of Esteban Gutierrez is a Formula One driver.
We're being mean to the man. He hasn't had the best of luck. But yeah,
Either of the seasons he was in the sport.
Yeah, one of those was in a Sauber. That doesn't count.
No, it was a good Sauber, though, wasn't it then?
Ish.
Yeah, in comparison.
It was white. It only went to tits when they painted it blue.
Don't forget, he was Maldonado'd.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
Well, it went really bad when they went grey and put the Chelsea logo on it, and that was a 0 points season.
That's true. He's in good company for people that have been Maldonado'd.
Yeah.
Tend to be everyone. World champions.
Yes, that's it.
But
Haas have got a new rear wing.
Haas have got a new rear wing coming in. Force India have a new aero package, which apparently is going to look completely different.
Well, they've got the double nostril at the front.
Which already looked completely different when it came in.
Surprisingly, they're the only team that still runs with a double nostril.
Yeah.
It's got an eye patch on it now and a skull and crossbones flag.
Do you think it's going to have a nose piercing?
Force emo.
Yeah, force emo.
Sauber have absolutely no upgrades and absolutely no young drivers, so they're not taking part in the test after the race.
The post race young driver test.
Are they in a worse state than we even thought?
Yeah, possibly. But what I think is crazy, right? The test is straight after
the test Monday and Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. I don't understand how.
Well, it's not a young driver test. It's a test that you.
It's
of the drivers has to be a young driver.
Yeah,
yeah.
But the I don't understand why they're not doing it. The only reason I can think that is the fact that they are literally going to have no upgrades ever.
Well, that's basically what they're saying.
R&D.
There are no new parts to test.
Yeah.
So we're already seeing Sauber's at the back of the grid. Are we going to see them disappearing further off the back of the grid?
What, like off completely?
Well, outside the 107%.
Be it mannered.
Being worse than Manor, because Manor at least managed to qualify within 107%.
I think there's a chance of them being HRT'd.
Do they still do the 107% rule?
In Q1?
Yeah.
If you are outside 107% in Q1, you have to appeal to get your place and show that you've earned it in practice.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, they... I think they brought that back in a couple of seasons ago. Obviously, it didn't count during the knockout era, but we don't talk about that.
No.
But, yeah, it's worrying for Sauber if they are actually saying they've got to Europe, there's nothing new on the car, and they don't have a test driver.
It's interesting that Manisha Kalfenborn's not been back either, has she? You know, we haven't seen her at races since she disappeared off to do money stuff.
Her profile has been non-existent.
Yeah.
She might have been there, though. I mean, it's Sauber.
Anonymous. Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, it's not
like anonymous Sauber.
It's not like there's been a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Maybe that could be the next move for Kvyat.
Sauber?
Yeah. Put him somewhere where you can forget about him.
It might be a move for Maldonado.
If he's still got that big PDVSA check,
he probably wouldn't even need as big a PDF
check. And the other upgrade thing is, do we get to see any Honda upgrades?
We might get to see some Honda upgrades. They've got some engine tokens left, haven't they?
What they've said is they're not going to do a slow trickle of upgrades. They're going to spend them.
Well, they said they were going to spend them effectively.
Effectively, yes.
Well, isn't that the fucking point?
Yes. when it comes down to it, yes.
I thought that was the whole point of the system.
Can I nominate that for Captain Obvious now?
Yes. Well, we don't normally run Captain Obvious on non-race weekends, but yeah, congratulations, Honda, you've got it.
That's it, pretty much, yeah. They are looking to spend all of the tokens that they've got left, and what have you got the numbers there?
I've got the numbers of tokens remaining here. Honda have 14 left out of their 32.
14.
The impression I got,
which is the second most of the four engine manufacturers.
Yeah.
The impression I got from what they were saying was that rather than doing a large number of small incremental upgrades, they were going to do one or two big hits.
Shit or bust.
Yeah. Shit or bust.
Well, am I right in thinking that pretty much with six engine tokens, you can pretty much redesign the engine? Probably it's far away from that.
I'm not sure that it's six.
I don't know how
could you spend 14 in one go?
I honestly don't know how it works, because it's never been adequately explained, and they're getting rid of it at the end of the season.
The token system.
Yeah.
Yes.
But as far as the other teams go, if it is six that it takes to redesign a whole engine, then that's what Ferrari have got left.
Or it might be six to redesign like the combustion engine part. I'm not sure. But I remember there's something being...
Isn't it two for the MGUH, two for the MGUK?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think again there. This will be available online for people to see.
Yeah.
Is it... I'm not sure that it's six for the combustion engine, and then there's all the ancillary, like the tubing and the piping, etc.
For fear of sounding like Dan, because he's the one that usually says this, if only we had easily accessible devices that could access a world of information.
Yeah, I've got this thing in my hand, but all I use it for is making fun of strangers and looking at pictures of cats.
Well, I just looked at Romain Grosjean's profile on Wikipedia, and he was actually born in Switzerland, so I don't know why he races under the French flag.
Rosberg.
Yeah.
But yes, Ferrari have got six left. Mercedes have 11, so they can still develop that engine quite a bit power unit quite a bit further.
Doesn't look good for Ferrari, does it? The more you know, it's this isn't the like Ferrari Renaissance we expected.
Not quite. We know that they spent a lot of tokens. And I'm wondering if the lack of tokens that they've got left, we are going to see them this is as close as we're going to see them
to
the front.
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah.
Because I think you're a good Renault upgrade ahead of away from them being ahead of Red Bull.
Well,
you reckon,
Red Bull being ahead of them.
Yeah, well,
which then brings us, we were talking about earlier, Max Verstappen into play, into challenging Mercedes.
There's no championships for Max Verstappen this year.
Renault have 24 tokens left.
Yeah, that is it.
They've used 8 tokens on their engine, and they're getting podiums already.
Now, they have spent those effectively.
Yeah. So, what they could do with the other 24 to get the extra power out
good
there.
Good Lord, 24.
You know, we've seen what the Red Bull is capable of with the Renault-less engine in the back of it.
See, I remember last year, like the tokens that Renault had at the end of the season last year, a Renault guy was saying that over the winter they could completely redesign the engine with the tokens
but
they had left over.
And then they changed the token rules for this year and just gave everyone 32 to start with.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, but what great, you know, it's what a great thing for Renault, because this engine is a lot better than it was last year.
Yeah.
We know that. And they've got all these tokens to play with. This is why I think Red Bull, with a Renault engine in it, will challenge Mercedes for championships next year.
Which is an interesting point. But then again, the formula starts again next year.
Because
it does start again. And you know where it starts with? It starts with more downforce.
Yes, it does.
And, given the fact
it starts with a brand new pencil for Adrian
Newey is a downforce magnet.
Yes, he is.
That's effectively saying he sucks.
Oh dear.
Moving swiftly on. Yeah, we've got the we'll talk about the race shortly, but we do have the test afterwards. And we're going to be getting to see some of the reserve drivers in the test and in FP1.
Esteban Ocon
is Renault's third driver of the week this week, after Sergei Sorokin drove in Russia. Lee, you've got a theory about what Julian Palmer needs to do.
He needs to drive fast.
And my nomination for Captain Obvious is Lee.
You were waxing lyrical on this before we started, and that's the best you can come up with now. No, Are you spent? Have you spent all your tokens?
No, I can redesign all my jokes with the tokens I have left. Well, look, he was beaten last weekend in the practice by
Sorokin.
Yeah,
GP2 driver.
And if that happens again this weekend with another green Formula One driver, that I don't think he will make the race after Spain.
I'm not sure how much practice times actually matter, because your Formula One driver is going to be doing tests for the Formula One race.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Whereas your young driver's doing what are basically demonstration laps.
Yeah, but that's sound if Palmer was putting in the same laps as Magnussen, but if he's getting beaten by the guy that's come in next to him in the other car, and he's 4 seconds down the road from Magnussen, you know, it's not looking good.
I mean, don't forget, Ocon isn't he's only on loan at Renault as well. He's actually
Mercedes
driver. Because
don't forget, Renault have got history doing this, although not as Renault, as Lotus. Rewinding to last season, the Enstone team had Palmer in a lot of FP1 sessions.
Yeah,
and when he was quicker than Maldonado, he ended up with the seat.
Mm.
Yeah, is this going to be a season-long audition for next year? Because Palmer's only got a contract for this year because he's paying for it.
Yeah.
He's having to bring in something like £10 million a year.
Let's not forget, that's French, isn't he?
No, he's Mexican.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, who's in this weekend?
It's Ocon that's in this weekend.
Well, he's Mexican at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be Spanish by the time
FP1
rolls
out. Was it a Russian guy?
It was a Russian driver that was in Russia.
Well, there's another driver in line for that seat then that I've forgotten, because there is a French guy that I don't know.
Nico Prost?
No, it's not Nico Prost. it's a French guy that I've heard the name of before.
You're not thinking Pierre Gasly again, are you? Because we've already been talking about him being the third Red Bull driver.
I don't think so. Hang on.
Lee's using one of those devices that you can find just unlimited amount of information upon.
Yeah, you know, he's looking at pictures of cats in F1 t-shirts.
Which makes fantastic podcast listening.
Oh, utterly. Lee, you are thrilling our listeners. I'm not even going to cut this out.
I'm not being funny, but they didn't need to know I was doing this. You let the fucking cat out of the bag.
No, you put the cat on your phone.
Yeah, I did the international roundy finger motion, which I'm doing now for our listeners.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were just...
For our listeners listening in black and white.
I thought you were just being Nico Rosberg after just winning a race.
No.
Doing the twirly finger.
Yeah, doing the twirly finger. Didn't people dance like that in the 80s?
Some
terrible pop music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, not me. Not
no,
me.
Just no. People in general.
No, I was in too many mosh pits in the 80s.
Yeah.
We've also...
1800s.
Oh, 1850s. We've also got Alfonso Chelis in the Force India on Friday morning.
Who has shown some amazing pace.
Alfonso Chelis? Alfonso on sofa?
Oh. No, the joke's getting worse.
That was a waste of a token.
It must be getting late. The jokes are getting worse.
he looked good in pre-season testing for Force India.
He looked very good because we thought that Force India were, I think we coined the phrase,
bag-sanding.
Yeah. They weren't sandbagging. They were giving it the full beans. Yeah. Maximum pasty from the word go. That's got a quote of Gellism there, by the way. Maximum pasty.
but he was holding his own ginsters, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Absolutely.
Maybe, you know, they could end up as Force Cornwall at this rate then. But I think there's a good chance that we could see him actually outside of Friday mornings next season. If he is ringing the hell out of that car, they've seriously got to be looking at giving him a race seat.
Yeah, I mean, they've had the same driver lineup for a few years now, Perez and Hulkenberg. And
this
I think
is Hulkenberg last year in Formula 1.
Yeah, I think I alluded to that a couple of podcasts ago, that Hulkenberg has not performed for Force India since he had that amazing spell where he won Le Mans 24 Hours all by himself. And Perez is being the consistent Force India driver at the moment, and Hulkenberg is dropping off. And you don't want, in Formula 1, you don't want to have the same driver lineup for too long, especially if you're a bit further back down the field.
Unless you're performing. You know,
If
you've got Nico and Hamilton, there's no reason to change your driver lineup.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. You're a little bit further back down the field. Yeah. You need to keep chopping and changing your driver lineup. Not all the time. Red Bull, you need to change your driver lineup after a few years, because you need to make sure you've got the best drivers in there to push the car forward to get further up the field.
Well, that's it. You need drivers which are going to push the car, because at the end of the day, nobody wants to race for Force India for the whole career. So you need someone like Perez, which is trying to show off to other teams to get himself a better seat.
Yeah, or for Hulkenberg to get gone and go to WEC, as is the rumour.
Do you think this is... Like, because ever since he won Le Mans all by himself, do you think that his eyes had gone off Formula 1 because he saw something else he could do
but he's
not
good at,
and not be 10th? Well, you're
not
on
really,
a good
no.
day.
Because after he'd won that, he was doing really well at the Formula 1. I think it's just that the car
doesn't suit him
as well as it did.
It suits Perez.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I think Chelis might be looking at a Formula 1 seat in that Force India team next year, though.
That would be interesting to see, because he's kind of coming under the radar this season, because the other young prospects, some in race seats, some not, that we knew about. Obviously, Stoffel Vandoorne with his incredible season in GP2 and first point scorer for McLaren this season.
Yeah.
Pascal Wehrlein...
Fantastic job he's doing at Manor.
Great performance in Manor, won DTM last year, but his name was always associated with a future Mercedes drive.
Yeah.
Chelis, it's just, where's he come from?
I've got stuff to say. You just spoke words, and it formed a picture in my head. I need to get the picture out. We were talking, weren't we, about...
it's a podcast, that's what we do.
Yeah, about... Toro Rosso looking for Honda engines.
Yes. Yeah.
Honda don't particularly, I don't think, want to get rid of Jensen or Fernando in McLaren because they need those two people in that team trying to make the fucking thing work. Yeah. But McLaren want to get Stoffel Van Dorn in a Formula One car.
Would they let him go to Red Bull, which is effectively the Red Bull organisation, which is, it's their rival.
And would Red Bull want a driver foisted on them? They have their own driver development.
But if they don't want year old Ferrari engines, and don't forget
a driver on loan, much as Esteban Ocon is to Renault.
The other thing is,
it kind of goes against everything that Toro Rosso was set up to be.
Yeah, it does.
Don't forget though, your rules for next year. I believe you can't run last year's engine.
No, you can't. They've all got to be current year engines.
Yeah. So I take it that Toro Rosso are after Honda engines because Ferrari have already said they won't give them a full fat Ferrari engine.
They're not allowed to do that under the new engine distribution rules.
Exactly. So they won't have an engine.
No, Ferrari
aren't allowed to give them to say that they won't give them the full fat.
No, they're not allowed to say they won't give them the full fat, but they did say they won't give it to them.
So that
means they won't have an engine if Ferrari won't supply them.
Thinking about what we were talking about earlier with Toro Rosso wanting Honda engines and Ron Dennis not liking that idea.
Yeah.
I think his power of veto would actually run out at the end of this year.
Does he have a limit on his power of veto, though?
Well, the regulations are with the engine manufacturers that if a team doesn't have an engine supply, one of the four existing engine suppliers has to.
Right.
So Bernie could actually say, well, Honda's supplying the least number of teams, so they have the most available time to build an extra team's worth of engines. Honda has to supply Toro Rosso.
I think Stoffel will be the bargaining chip. You can have Honda engines, but we put Stoffel in the car.
I don't know that either side would agree to that. It's an interesting theory, but as Paul said, it goes against everything that Toro Rosso was sort of set up to do.
But we've just said that the pool of young drivers for Toro Rosso isn't particularly deep. Yeah. So it's not like they're putting someone else out of the car. It means Danny's fucked. But I don't see the problem with it.
I think Stoffel Van Dorn's going to be in a McLaren next year. I just can't decide which driver won't be out of Alonso and Button.
It will be Button if Stoffel's in the car. I think that's who will be replaced for it. But this time
last week we were all saying that Button was a shoe-in for Williams next season.
I still think
he might well be.
Yeah, don't forget.
Alex Lynn and Jenson Button could be Williams drivers next year.
That is true.
McLaren. Jensen can want to go to Williams all he wants if it happens. McLaren have the decision whether he does it or not because they have the option on him for next year.
We're starting our run silly season about 2 months early, aren't we?
3 months early.
Yeah.
Red Bull kicked off silly season when they started swapping fucking drivers around. This is not our fault.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, fair point. Red Bull have kicked off silly season by already moving their drivers around.
So, back to Barcelona. Like we say, it's a team that it's a circuit that all the teams know well, having had 6 days of testing already there in two separate stints at the start of the season. Let's have some predictions.
Home favourite Fernando Alonso, top five finish.
I was going for race predictions first and bold predictions after, but okay.
No, that's my race prediction.
That's your race prediction.
Yeah.
Winner and pole.
Rosberg's run's going to have to come to an end at some point, isn't it?
We kept saying that about Pastor crashing last year.
Yeah. We did. But eventually it did stop for about three races.
Yeah. When you realised you'd have to actually drive like a racing driver to keep a seat. It didn't work.
The last couple of races I said that Hamilton would overthrow Rosberg and he hasn't. So this time I'm going to say Rosberg will continue his run and maybe he won't. Maybe Vettel or Hamilton will win. So I'll say Rosberg for the win and Hamilton for pole.
Dan?
I'm going to go with a Hamilton pole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It might be Vettel's turn to take a win, but I think I'm going to go with Rosberg because just because.
Mm-hmm. Max Verstappen wins his debut race for Red Bull.
From World?
That's
prediction and bold prediction all in one. I get your strategy. You're using less prediction tokens.
Yeah,
I've got a bold prediction which is not going to come true at all whatsoever. Danny Kvyat to outperform both Red Bulls.
I'm going to go for Hamilton pole.
First corner incident
into a Red Bull.
No, Danny Kvyat, first corner incident into a Force India, because that's the Ferrari equivalent to a Red Bull Toro Rosso.
Wouldn't it be funny if Vettel just happened, took out Vettel?
Sorry, guys.
It's okay, no harm, no foul,
yeah,
Max.
Yeah, don't worry, Max. Come back to the garage.
Happens to the best of people.
Put your hot pot pot on.
I'm going to go for a Hamilton pole and Rosberg win. Podium for Verstappen there.
Podium for Verstappen?
I think Red Bull's going to go really well around there. You know, yeah, it's a chassis circuit, isn't it? I know it's got a massive straight.
It's got a long straight, but then it's quite fast.
Twisty and fast.
But we can't... The thing is, I don't think that long straight's going to be quite the Achilles heel that it has been in the past, because the engine doesn't seem too bad.
No. So, and we've also discussed previously, I'd just like to go back to the very, very front, yeah. Mercedes maybe not having that engine turned all the way up. So if they have to, just a couple more
clicks. Yeah, but let's face it, they must have half an eye on reliability now.
Lewis is running short of engines.
Lewis is running short. So yeah. It's not like they can do that, and they might be thinking...
Actually, here's a bold prediction. Lewis in Q3.
Maybe Lewis has had the engine problems because of where his car's been and what's happened, and he's had to turn the engine up to try and get himself through the grid. Maybe Rosberg hasn't had the engine problems because he hasn't been pushed.
Maybe. That's always a possibility.
That is... But that is about as likely as anything else.
Yeah. That's logical.
Yeah. I'm not used to Lee and Logic in the same building.
Don't you worry, I'm going to fix it all soon.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
Okay, is it bold prediction time then?
Let's go for a bold prediction.
Go on, Dan.
Force India podium.
Ooh.
I'll take it you mean Perez.
Probably Perez, yeah. But I'm keeping it broad.
Yeah, my bold prediction, as I said before, Danny Kvyat to outperform both Red Bulls. Probably not going to happen.
But could do.
But could do.
It's not like we've not seen Toro Rosso's outperforming Red Bulls.
Before.
Well, I think considering my race prediction is Max Verstappen winning his first race for Red Bull, my bold prediction is going to have to be the second coming of Jesus Christ.
What? Fernando Alonso?
No, that'd be Jesus.
Yeah.
My bold prediction.
It's not really my bold prediction.
Paul's asleep again. What's your bold prediction, Lee? Which bold prediction is the second?
There's not many places you can go from there.
No, don't get me wrong, the older I get, I do generally find myself becoming a bit more spiritualist to the point where, you know, I think maybe there might be some sort of deity.
No, I don't believe you're growing your hair and you've got a beard. Take a look at yourself.
I didn't say it was becoming one. But I don't think it's Jesus. But, bold prediction, double McLaren points.
Which is possible.
Did it last time. My bold prediction... Top 10 finish for Gutierrez.
Points for Gutierrez.
Points for Gutierrez. Why not?
I've been a bit harsh on the old chap today, so
more chance of me scoring points.
stick.
All right, Guido.
Stick to your phone app. just want to say congratulations to Williams reserve driver Paul de Resta for his win in DTM.
Absolutely, leading the championship after the opening weekend. Won a race and finished strongly in the other.
Yeah. Was kind of a 1-2 for F1, ex-F1 drivers until the stewards got involved, because Timo Glock actually came second in the second race. However, he was disqualified because his rear boot flap was 1.9mm too big.
I assume we're talking about what the Americans would call a trunk rather than his shoes.
Yes.
1.9 millimeters.
Yes.
Very, very German. What, it was open or just too big?
Just too big. Yeah.
Oh, surely everybody knows what size the car is supposed to be.
Not rear boot, flap, wing.
Just a wing?
Yeah.
It was 1.9 millimetres too big.
Yeah.
Well, that's the team's fault.
Yeah, that is outside of the... That 1.9 millimetres outside of the allowed tolerances.
Why don't you say 2 millimetres?
Because it's very efficiently...
They measured it precisely.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that it's a smidgen too big. You know, a smidgen is 3 gnats.
Yeah.
I think that's about it for this week, isn't it?
Yep.
I think so.
So, keep getting in touch. You can tweet us on @3legs4wheels.
I have something new to pimp.
Oh, what are you plugging this week?
Because people, so many people have been getting in touch with me on Twitter and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've set up a separate Twitter account just for Formula One.
Because I was just about to say, you can tweet us on @3legs4wheels, or our individual Twitter accounts are, yeah, your, Lee, start with yours.
I am now @atotalshunt.
@atotalshunt.
Yeah.
Amazing. @atotalshunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am @pablo100.
@flood21.
And I'm off Twitter at the moment.
So don't tweet Dan. And keep using the hashtag #YourVoiceInF1. Getting some great feedback. And email us if you want on 3legs4wheels@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be commentating on the race, doing the live blog as per usual.
Yeah.
Will we, Chris?
Yeah, we will be, yeah.
Yep. Sat in front of the TV watching it, wishing we were there. If anybody wants to send us sort of plane tickets and paddock passes, then get in touch.
Not for this weekend, not for this short notice.
Not for this weekend, and
I'll turn them down. I'll manage it, I'll do it.
Yeah, I hate to say it, I can't do Monaco. I've got a gig that afternoon. I'll still be doing the blog, I'll just be running off and doing the gig straight away.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I think I'd still do it, Amber's nice and all, but...
No, it's for charity.
Fuck charity.
We'll leave you with that. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.